As retailers entered the lockdown in March 2020, a small, diverse group of Canadian thought leaders gathered to virtually speculate, collaborate, and share their insights on the waves of disruption facing retailers. The Business of Retail podcast emerged as an unflinching strategic alternative to the conventional discourse, revealing challenges in the headlines and exploring new, unconventional paths for all facets of the retail industry. Now, here's the panel.
Welcome, everyone. This is the Business of Retail podcast series, and this is our next segment here. I've done an intro with everyone here, so let's get into the conversation.
For those watching now, we actually had an interesting conversation. What is that? What the hell does that even mean? Mental models. But I think generally we're grappling with the idea that how we think about business, and in this case, retail, how we think about retail as leaders, both assessing our situation, defining our problem, and creating and deciding where we want to go and creating that strategic plan. We have all sorts of blind spots that are emerging in this new series of realities. And so mental model being like, how do we even look at our business? I think is really where we're heading with this. And I think we're going to explore that today, and just, we're going to roam around and hopefully you enjoy the roam. And we could talk about llamas as well, right, Christine?
Yeah, we can. With our famous Portland llama out at the protests, providing solace for people as they're out there. So that was the news today. Interesting.
So, I'm just wondering if that was a black swan moment, because I wouldn't have expected a llama to be walking down my local main street calming protests down. So
yeah, no, it's a guy who lives in rural Oregon, and he carts them in, and he's been to a number of different protests, and people are calm when they see him. They stop, take photos. He's apparently quite friendly. And so it's just kind of an uncommon thing to see when you're in the midst of a protest.
Well, I might, I'll use that as a segue to start off with something, which is for years I've been interested in systems thinking and ecosystems as a metaphor for business and not just nature. And part of that years ago is to explore the idea of chaos theory, which was talked about a lot and kind of fell off the table for a while. But within that is the idea of a butterfly effect, which is in a very nonlinear complex system that's unstable, a very small incident or change in a state can have a large difference in a later state that's non-predicted. And so maybe even the llama in Portland, for all we know, 2 years out from now, we could have a very different world order because of the llama, and whether or not he spat at a certain politician or not in the lineup. So that would be an idea of a mental model. Should we be looking at the state of things right now as a complex nonlinear system, as opposed to the old retail way of, we got to make this really super simple and we're in a linear thing that we're going to keep improving and stripping waste out of?
I think
should we be taking that lean attitude into where we're headed right now, trying to understand the next stage of retail?
Yeah, I think that mental models are kind of way a perceptive understanding of a world which has been built up over a long period of time, either by success or mentoring, coaching, whatever it might be. You have a way of thinking. We all experience this one way or another. How do we, we see a stimuli and we respond to it in a almost predictable way. Now, things that have happened over the last 3 or 4 months have put us into a very unstable situation, much as David kind of alluded to. But are the patterns of how we think, the mental models, actually going to serve us well during this time? And again, to David's point of this, let's keep it linear, let's just work harder, let's do more of what we used to do, just do more of that and get through this somehow, is probably not a good strategy right now.
I still think a lot of this mental model relied so much on processes that were normal. So you could forecast your marketing, your merchandising by seasonality and be prepared for it. All of that just got thrown out the window suddenly, right? Is there a back to school event? Is there Thanksgiving? Is there Halloween? Is there a Christmas? There's so many doubt, so much doubt out there about how business is going to be. You know, I think the mental model of a CEO and management team right now is, you know, what else can we do and how fast can we do it to make up for what we don't know? And that is the biggest fear, is what you don't know right now. Anyway, and that, you know, I think that we can call it mental model. I know I started off a little earlier by saying, referencing to mental health, but I think that really does create mental health issues inside of management's mind about how to get around these problems. I think, Christine, earlier you said that it falls on the shoulders of the CEO, right? I'm not going to look like a good performer, or all the blame is going to be on me. It's a tough place to be.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on that. I mean, you've got, you know, an entire organization looking to someone to be able to shift and move with this. And to your point, like, this is just unprecedented. We don't have the experience. We haven't gone through this before to be able to react and move and strategize. So it really does take a lot of out of the box thinking. And I think it makes a lot of people nervous when they're used to their day to day, they're used to the known factors. They can count on, you know, the reliability of their infrastructure, and all of that has shifted and changed, and consumers have shifted and changed. So we really need to be able to look at what their needs are and how do we address those and how do we shift, you know, our strategies around that. And I think that is really a scary thing at a number of different levels in all, you know, different types of retail. So it's, you know, it's a tough, challenging time, but I think the people that will be successful are the ones that can look at it as an opportunity for change and growth and to shift, and Gary's favorite word, pivot, to find some other opportunity to get out there and get after different businesses. And I think, you know, we've talked about it in the past, but manufacturers like Arc'teryx making gowns for medical staff and things like that. Like, there's a lot of that going on where people have been able to shift their models to take advantage of the situation and provide, you know, healthcare workers with masks, and you know, you're even seeing the plexiglass coverings at stores and things like that. So people are able to shift and move and change, but there are a lot of people out there who I think are really struggling with how to get, you know, out of their own way.
And even with those types of pivots, it's for all I know, or we know, everything else about the organization's the same, other than they're adding a new product line and diverting some resources. So that's a change, but what about more fundamentally? And I, you know, I think the unknown about the external world is part of it. There's also the don't know what you don't know, or your blind spots in terms of how you do things. And when you talk about people, you know, I've come from a family of lawyers, and they have a way of thinking. Like, there's a, you're trained. And so even in your day on the weekend over a barbecue, you feel like there's a little cross-examination coming, you know, or people who are engineers have a way of doing things. I think retailers who are operators whose career has been built on that lean model, this is incredibly hard, because we're looking now at not projecting from the past or stripping out waste, because the system you've built may not even be right anymore. But that doesn't mean you're floundering necessarily, because there are other occupations and disciplines that actually are comfortable with that kind of uncertainty and deal with that non-linearity. So how do we bring that into play? And do we even know that we're in our own way when we're now trying to deal with this in our, around our boardroom table?
You know, that reminds me of a movie, I think it's 2012, 2013, Battleship. And it's kind of futuristic. I'm not sure if anybody's seen it, but they've been attacked by aliens. And they're at sea, and one of the naval cadets there is screaming at the commander, "Please, sir, give me an order," right? Because they've encountered something so foreign. They've never seen it before. They've tried firing everything at it. It doesn't work. And the cadet is screaming, "Give me an order." And I think that's part of what the world that we're in right now is, give me an order. Give me something that I can work with to make a difference. And I'm not sure everybody knows what that is. Everybody's going to fall back onto the basics. There's no question. That's where we're going to go. We have to. And then from there, we're going to start to explore, right? Whether that's unconventional or contrarian thinking, it's going to come out. And it's going to be that level of thought process that creates the future. It can't be what it was before, because we know, you know, we can call it the acceleration or the shift to e-commerce, but whether or not it's permanent, right? That's what retailers are contending with. But at the end of the day, there is, you know, there is that element that the elephant in the room that actually is sucking up a lot of business right now, because consumers are afraid to go out. And when the doors reopen and maybe COVID is gone, I don't know when, are they going to go back? But in the meantime, how do you compete? And how do you compete in the future if they don't want to come back?
Well, and I think that's sort of the key around how, again, idea of a mental model. Is there a model right now where you sort of tread water long enough, knowing that the only thing I can predict right now is that there could be a range of possible states, say a year from now. Maybe it's going to take longer, but definitely it's 2021. And they can range from something quite, you know, sort of dystopian all the way to pretty utopian. Something in there is going to start to emerge, but I think there's still a lot of unknowns to be known between now and then, and a lot of random elements that are going to come. Like, for example, George Floyd, that incident, I wonder if that happening a year ago or 3 years ago, and those things were happening then, didn't create the same impact that it did right now. I wonder if that's by accident or if that's because of the variability during COVID and our heightened sensitivities societally. But it's amazing how Black Lives Matter now has become a major, major concurrent thing to COVID because of one incident in Minneapolis, on top of a whole litany of other things that were bubbling up. So I think there's still some events that may happen between now and say Q2 next year that could be societal or could be business oriented. We don't know yet. So how do we kind of keep ourselves in play healthy enough as an organization and be able to start to pre-plan for a range of possible outcomes, like understand a little bit about what we would need to do to adapt to those, and have an idea of what early indicators might signal what direction is emerging so we get a head start on it. That's sort of my play to throw on the table, see what you guys think. But I think there's got to be a way that we embrace the uncertainty as opposed to rush to a decision right now under the old model.
You know, every change initiative succeeds or fails based on the ability to communicate and how well you communicate within your organization up and down the ladder. And however that's how you engage everyone. And I think right now it's the same issue. Some things will not change, and the importance of communication within the organization at this point is even more critical, because people want to know, back to that cadet, give me an order. What should I do? How should I do it? And why is it important? And a leader today is going to have to really elevate that, particularly if they have a vision, right? And that vision needs to be, you know, what it may not be what the future is going to look like. It's how we're going to get through this quarter. I think those are realities that you have to grasp. That it's nice to think that you can plan out a year or 2 years. I mean, I think some of us are old enough to remember we used to plan out 5 years in advance. You know, today it's, you know, I think we've gone to 1 and 2 years. I think you're planning quarterly and in some cases monthly at this stage. You know, and if you're not, you know, and you're thinking too far out, right? I say that because I think the stock market's also planning too far out. You know, so I think that you need to be focused on the current and how do you solve that. And then once you get through it, as you get through it, go to the next month. Go to the next, roll it to the next month. Don't try to get there to the future before you know what it's going to look like, because I don't think anybody has a clue.
But don't you think there's some advantage if you're prepared to actually assess, here's like maybe four scenarios that could be states in the future? I mean, very big picture stuff, like the economy rebounds well and there's a vaccine, blah, 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 versus we have an economic collapse. Even something as simple as that. It's not about taking your past data that you've built up over the last 10 years about holiday seasons and projecting it out. That's how we've done everything in retail since, I don't know, since I've been connected to the industry. is really extending out and then trying to overshoot last year's, or you make little adjustments. Now we're talking about, hey, there's future states that could be in play. What impact does that have on us? And what do we need to do today to mitigate against bad and prepare ourselves to seize opportunities?
So you need
to then play month to month. I agree with that part of it.
Yeah, you need to build a very fluid organization.
Yeah, there you go.
That's your start. And that's when you're being able to plan out on a monthly, weekly basis and adjust. That's the key to this. And because you're fighting fires all along the way and you're putting them out, you may be starting some, right? But at the end of the day, you're fighting fires and you need to be fluid. Otherwise, how do you get to adjust to your point? It's a perfect world where we have a vaccine, the economy balances itself out, or is it the extreme and an economic fallout? Which is it? But if you're fluid, you can adjust. If you're fixed, and you're boxed in, really difficult.
I've got some kind of different sort of thoughts as you're talking. I kind of understand where you're coming from. Like, this month is like a vision at last, just a month. But I think that I would take a wider view than that, because some of these flexibilities you describe require investment to be flexible. And therefore, it needs some kind of framework to say, we're going to develop these broad capabilities or these broad options to actually hit. If I'm a CEO, I need a vision that I can talk to my team, their team, the people who actually add in the value, the people in the shop, in the stores, in the warehouse, driving the trucks. I want this team to be on my side. So I need to say, I'm getting beyond the end of August. I'm actually drawing a picture maybe to January 2021, maybe beyond that, maybe beyond peak, beyond two peaks, because I need to communicate that, because we will need to twist and turn, and I need all this team on my side. This is our fight that we've got to do. And so that is a very different picture and very different mental model to how it has been run in the past. And my views are fairly clear. And having had some experience in Canada, is the organization is somehow turned upside down, in the sense that we have value-adding people up here, people actually driving the trucks, stuffing boxes in the warehouse, serving customers at the store, maybe people in the merchandising to be. And then it seems to me that we're serving the CEO, because nothing happens unless the CEO signs something off or commits to it or whatever. And I think that the CEO has to be at the bottom of the organization, driving this machine, helping it along. And I think that this is a different mental picture than many retailing CEOs may care to choose to kind of drive down that path. I think that my experience has been mostly in catastrophes. So I've learned pretty quickly what a good leader in this kind of situation really looks like. And it doesn't look like a professional manager. It doesn't look like somebody who sits in an office, feet up on the desk, issuing edicts to people. So I think the vision, to George's point, to communicate that in an effective way, we may pick a scenario, and that scenario may not be the valid one. But if we've got the whole team behind us properly engaged in this, we won't see silos. We won't have people throwing, bombs at each other because they're in different silos. We'll see an organization joined together, fighting this thing that they all see as the same thing, the enemy, the uncertainty. So I think for me, the logic is to have a vision that people can plug into, but also some risks around that vision, and to be clear about what those risks are. We're heading in this path, but if this happens, if this scenario occurs, we are going to have to head in this direction, and we need your support to make sure we do that genuine pivot, as opposed to this kind of, we're just going to fiddle around with the deck chairs and, we've pivoted.
I like your point about risk, because in our work over quite a number of years, we're exposed, either we're helping or we're exposed to retail strategy. And it tends to be, here's something we want to have happen, and here's how we're going to build to get to that, as opposed to here are a bunch of things that may happen, and we're prepared for those. The one thing that is really notable, though, is a lack of strong risk assessment and then mitigation strategy around the risk. And I think I understand why, because I think for a long time, even though we've struggled with retail Amazon effect and all those things, it's been a pretty good economic run for retail, like decade to decade for quite a while. So you could probably be really strong about saying, hey, we're going to have 100 stores in the next 5 years or whatever it might be, and let's drive it, and not look at, well, what ifs and how do we, but we need it now. I think you're right on. I think to do what you want to do that you're talking about, Gary, and I agree with it, there needs to be a very clear future direction, but it may have to be articulated, like, we're going to have the ability to handle a range of things 3 years out, and to get there, we're going to make these investments, but here are the risks we might face, and here's what we're going to do about those risks. And that's I have not seen a lot of planning like that within the retail sector, in my experience. I've seen it in other sectors, but not retail.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I'm gonna challenge your thinking a little bit, though. You know, I think that I said communication, but the second C is choices, right? And the tough part is, which, if you have a vision, what choices are you going to make? Is it the brand? Is it going to be about technology? Is it going to be about getting results next month? Which choice, financial choices, are you going to make? Where are the resources going to come to make all of that? If you want all of that, how are you going to make that happen? Because a broad vision requires all of those things to be played out. You just can't play out one thing. But if you in this scenario right now that we're in, if you're a decent brand and you've got your act together, then you might be at a place, because you know who you are as a brand, then you've already have half the battle beaten. Now, how are you going to compete? That's the other quarter. So you're three quarters done. And then the other part is the execution of this. So I'm breaking it down very simply, but at the end of the day, it takes a lot of resources to get there. And how much resources do you have, and what choices are you going to make as a leader today?
And right? Can it be command and control anymore? Like, if you're going to move quickly, then you need all your people really enrolled on this, and to be able to make there has to be cascading choices all the way down. And for them to line up, the communication, it's not just communication, because that's talking at someone. It's got to be enrollment, engagement, but you got to be adept at it. But I look at an example where Lululemon acquired Mirror recently. And I would love to know behind the scenes how that transpired during, maybe that was in play a year ago, I don't know. But if that was sort of an opportunistic win for them out of COVID, what I'm interested in is not that a technology innovator was purchased, it's more like, how did they come to that decision? And where did that originate within the organization? And how is the story told internally? Like, that would be very, I would want to copy that if I was another leader, as opposed to rush out and then acquire an app. It's not the point. It's how are they deciding and moving? That's a strategic play, right? Mm-hmm. And we can see more of that. Like, the reason this is very complex is, if a scenario happens where retail real estate collapses, then presuming the space is still available, but the rents collapse, that could be a game changer as well. And there could be all sorts of opportunities. Or if players like David's Tea kind of collapse and someone else in the market can make a strategic buyout for whatever reason, you know, all these things are in play, but they need form, and they need a way to be dealt with a lot of uncertainty. And that's fascinating for me. Like, how does retail become that kind of retail animal?
You know, I had a
linear animal.
I wrote a post, and I think culture was one of them, but everything was about customer experience. So there's only four levels inside the organization, but everybody reported to the front lines. So the front line actually made choices and actually rated the management team, and marketing no longer was at the top. They were at the bottom. So, and I to your earlier point, I mean, you have to engage the organization this way now. right? Because you need a lot more, much stronger buy-in. My personal belief is that most retailers fail because they fail to execute. You know, there's a lot of great grand visions out there, some really detailed planning that's put together. The rollouts, you know, may come out with fanfare or just a notebook, but the execution is horrible. And that is the problem. And until you get that right, and you figure out how to execute and engage the front lines that they've bought in, because I'll tell you what, the number one thing front lines will tell you, every time there's a change, here comes the Book of the Month Club, right? Another change. They never buy into it. And every organization that has failed, I guarantee you, talk to the managers at the store, they'll tell you the same thing. Too many changes, not effective enough.
There's a need for collaboration, and I agree with you in just talking about you know, the scenario plan situation. And I think back to your point earlier about the captain of the ship saying, like, or the guy saying to the captain, what do we do? It's up to everybody on the team to sort of figure that out. And again, I think that the critical piece is, by leaving out the consumer, by leaving out the on-front, you know, on the ground, boots on the ground workers, you miss out on really getting a sense of what's happening, you know, with your brand and with the consumer and even within your organization. And so I think, you know, there's a vulnerability that has to happen at a very senior level to be able to open up and collaborate, you know, at all levels of the organization and be understanding of that and be open to that. And I think you do have some leaders that are stepping up to that charge, and we're seeing that now. And then you have a lot who just aren't comfortable or confident with that. And I think, you know, to your point, that's the demise of the organization. If they can't, you know, get everyone at every level to a point where they're all on board and understanding the vision, then how are you going to execute? You're just, you know, you're going to fall flat.
If I can share this with you, because I agree with Christine, think about this for a second. On average, it depends on the brand, but on average, on a Sunday, it can, your revenue can be anything from 10 to 20% of your total weekly revenue. How many store managers and field managers do you think are working in stores or in the field on a Sunday? It's 1/4 or 1/5 of your revenue. Now, you take Saturday and Sunday, it could be 35 to 40% of your revenue. Again, depending on the brand. How many field managers do you think are out there? I can tell you, very few. Now, when I, at one point, I told a group of people in one of our four brands that I ran, I said, I want you guys out there on a Saturday and Sunday. It was just so draconian, right, that you're, because why do you get promoted to a field manager? So you can work Monday to Friday. Don't you know that? How many marketers do you think ended up going to on a weekend to stores? Doesn't happen. But to my own credit, they used to be alerts. Store managers, we used to call each other and say, he's out there. He's out here on a Saturday or a Sunday, right? And it was kind of funny, right? But I was out with my little kids at the time and visiting stores. The point is, unless you have that level of commitment and focus on the days that you know the customer is there, you're not going to win. No way, no how. And it is, I don't care how well you execute, how well you plan something, it won't work.
And the worst aspect of what you're describing there, George, is when there's an announcement that the VP or the C, whatever, is coming to the store, and somebody runs around with a bush, and we're all tidied up and ready to present ourselves. And I think, shop your brand, shop your website, shop your brand. Go and talk to customers and see what their real issues are. Talk to the people on the floor, see what their issues are. Go and talk to the store manager, find out how, you know, how they see, like, home office, head office, call it what you like. And then go back to your colleagues and
present. We used to present. Call them dog and pony shows, Gary.
Because you'll get a great understanding of the real problems. Go and present that back to your colleagues, and then you'll find the real problems.
Your online reviews, because you've got, that is what is happening, and that's what other consumers are going to look at. I mean, think about Amazon. Like, you're always going to look at the readings and reviews to assess as a consumer what is out there. And I think now more than ever, like, it's really critical. Like, your brand and your message and your trust factor is so key right now.
Absolutely.
I want to go back to Lulu for a moment. Lululemon, I don't think it's about the product that's made it successful. I know everyone will say that, and it is a great product, and they help create athleisure as a category. But they've been ripe for the picking from competition now for maybe 15 years, and they're still at the head of it. I've always liked their culture, and it was created not just Chip Wilson, but Daryl Kopke in the early days. And they leveraged Landmark, and we can go off and talk about Landmark and all that. But what happened was they were able to onboard people and triple and quadruple exponentially in size the number of people geographically. But everyone was really clear in what the brand stood for. And I, at that time, maybe 15 years ago, I'd never seen a retailer so decentralized in autonomy for decision-making, like what store managers could do. But they were all on the same page. So the idea about going back, George, to your point about making choices, that's what strategy is really, right? It's choice. But there is an ability to let go from head office, and people knew, generally speaking, to make the right decisions because of how they were indoctrinated and on board about the brand and what mattered. And that effort that they put in the early days, I think is still there in the organization as part of the DNA of it. I think that's their competitive advantage, more so than, because people can make other products now that have properties and emulate. So if you're going to build that, again, if we're going to be productive around how do retailers navigate this and become different at how they make decisions and assess their environment, you know, things like that are going to be the ingredients. Looking at your culture and how do you, are you a command and control culture? You know, is that going to work in the future? I think things like new metrics, I think we measure half the time the wrong things. And my favorite story recently was Bonnie Henry, the chief medical officer for BC, taking on the airlines. The airlines are saying they're providing passenger data, and the health authority is saying, well, you're sending files over, but the data's useless. So you've got, and I can see what they're saying at Air Canada, for example. They're going, yeah, but we sent the file. There is data in it. And they're saying, yeah, but it doesn't include who it is, what seat, you know, anything. They're sending the wrong data, but they're saying we did the job because they're process oriented. So, you know, my thing around how do you get people out of that, we're on that treadmill of always doing the same things, but we'll tweak it. Part of that is to get away from being process minded, because if everyone in your organization is adherent to a process you built, when they think they're innovative, basically all they're doing is switching something slightly. That's where I think customer centricity or customer experience, without worrying about all the bells and whistles and shininess, it's more like just that mindset can get people out of that process space. So maybe that's something that needs to be added in and baked into the new mental model. I don't know, but what else, right? Like,
yeah,
but what can they do to get out, to get into a new paradigm?
Well, and the mental model of the CEO is the key. And if you're not open-minded today, flexible, and if you are a command and control, and I've met some of those people, it doesn't work. Not in this environment, right? Because you're so fixated on being able to dictate, and because their processes are fixed, right? Everything has its order. And when it does, when you have change like this, it's chaos. Well, you need a leader that has, whose mental model allows them to strive in that chaos. So it's strive and thrive in that chaos. Otherwise, how do you change and find your way out of it, right? Because it's changing for you. You don't have to change anything. It's changing for you. You just have to find your way out. And where is that exit? And what's it, you know, and where are you going to land? And can you compete there? Right? You need to be able to compete for the long term.
Yeah, and as much as I believe in customer centricity, it doesn't mean the customer is always right or doing everything the customer wants is healthy for your business. There are different lenses, right? And that takes work to find that mashup of what's right for customers and be customer centric, but also make sure the business benefits from it. And that takes a team to do that as well. I think I like what you just said. Like it's about embracing this. This could be a huge opportunity that COVID is presenting to really rejuvenate business, and as opposed to be fearful of it or resentful of the fact. And I think retail has needed a rejuvenation for a long time, and many talk about that already, right? But
I used to call it the episodic discontinuity event, because it was like somebody punched somebody in the head, you know, the lockdown, and then it was, you know, something was broken. There was a definite break from the old, and we didn't know what the new was, but we knew it wasn't going to be just a linear progression. It had been broken. But I'm sort of landing on a great pause, the lockdown, and the reset. It is this opportunity for business to kind of almost deal with or let go of those things that they felt that they kind of sort of knew and were masters. And that's the question mark, masters of. Here's a whole open swim lane that you can define for yourself as a brand, as a CEO, as a management team, as a business to say, okay, it's all changed, but what can we make of this? What do we have to develop? What can we make of this? Because with so many organizations falling by the wayside, I think there's a huge opportunity for remaining businesses that can keep themselves intact and move forward in an energetic way. Because that revenues may diminish because we've got people with less money. That would be the ultimate situation we face. But there'd be whole chunks of business that the market either has, the survivors will pick up, or new entrants will come into the marketplace. And for those businesses that are already here, they've got an enormous advantage if they can just get this piece right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think an inherent other theme in this is innovation, right? So it's not only being able to decentralize and move quickly, but it's to be able to embrace or inject more innovation into the culture. And true innovation, which is really creating new types of solutions as opposed to improvement. And all this sounds pretty daunting, but like you said, it nothing's new. There are industries that technology sectors have built their whole cultures around this kind of thing for years.
I think innovation piece and a lot of collaboration opportunity as well. So I think you're seeing brands in similar spaces, I viewed Adidas and Allbirds collaborating together on a common vision to try and come up with the ultimate, you know, closed loop footwear. And I think we're going to start to see a lot more of that, like an openness to either people within industry working together to collaborate, or a forced model where people in certain industries are going to have to look to other industries to help delineate and look at new opportunities out there. And I think that's really exciting, because you just, that infuses, you know, different mindsets from different realms, and, you know, it could be very, very interesting to see what happens from that.
I'd love to see a landlord or landlords collaborating, co-creating new solutions with tenants or prospective tenants, as opposed to for them, you know, as an example. Craig, what are you seeing in terms of, you've been writing a lot about who's been kind of either downsizing or going into receivership. Are they at the root of that? Are you seeing just organizations that weren't adapting kind of finally having to own up to that? Or are you seeing some really hopeful for a resurgence if they're given some time and space? And like, what are the signals you're seeing that they might do something dramatically different?
That's a good question. You know, and throughout the conversation, I've been thinking about this. So are we going to see a major shakeup in many retailers around the country? You know, some of the retailers that we've seen announcing problems, some of them haven't been that innovative. I don't think they're sort of the old guard retailers that have been around forever. One of the reasons why in Canada, many of them have been headquartered in Montreal, which was traditionally our, you know, fashion center in decades past, right? At the same time, some retailers like Aldo, I wouldn't say that they were not innovative. I've seen them bring in all kinds of different interesting things over time, from technology to, you know, some localized store concepts as well. But, you know, to a degree, it was the finances that were a challenge. But at the same time, retailers that were innovating, in many cases, were actually doing better financially, were better able to weather store closures and a downturn in, you know, consumer spending here in Canada. So I'm wondering if we're going to see a major shakeup of C-suite and management in various organizations. And my question is, where are some of these, say, new leaders going to come from? Have these skills been taught? Are these skills which are innate? How important is experience going to be in the future, especially as retailers increasingly, say, move online or market to consumers through social media and other avenues that isn't the traditional store? So the old store model, to a degree, seems to, you know, be going out the window. And now I see some retailers, I won't name names because they might get angry if they see this, but, you know, they're saying, oh, we're coming back. We got, you know, X number of millions of dollars from a certain bank to come back. And I'm thinking, well, that's all fine and well, but are you just going to continue along the same path and keep failing?
Yeah, that's the question, right? And you know, I think this is just me, but I think that the outcome of all this is going to be more of a blended solution. In other words, I've been saying that lean operators, you know, lean-minded, I mean, operators, and that pursuit of shedding waste and linear processes, that's not for dramatic purposes. I said that's kind of irrelevant in the moment, but I think it's the blend of the two. Like, when you look at the pure play online guys who've gone into stores, like be it Indochino or it could be a brand like Herschel, I don't think they've done their retail very well at all. But it was this idea like the old retail doesn't work, so we're smarter, we're digital guys, and we're going to go do it. I think there's so much talent innately held within that ability to create some kind of Cirque du Soleil moment with audience participation that is a store environment. Like, that skill set is still incredibly valid and strong, but how does that work with a different paradigm for deciding our future? And I don't think it's either or. I think it's gotta be a blended solution. I always thought if Indochino's founders had meshed up with Harry Rosen back in the day, that could have been super cool to see what would have come of that, but neither of those would have probably gone for it.
Mm-hmm. I think the future of retail, yes, you know, technology, I mean, to me, technology is that bolt-on piece that needs to happen. Everybody needs to have it. I'm not going to say that I would get excited by it. I am. But I'm going to tell you that the future of physical retail lies in what we knew of retail in the past. And you've got to bring that into the future. Because I don't think there's a retailer that's in the last 15 or 20 years who's been in the industry has any idea what service was like back in the days to Craig's favorite place in department stores. You know, and it's going to take that level of service to win in physical retail. It will. I mean, why would I come and visit your store? I'm going to come on to online, and what is the experience that I'm going to have? Right? Why should I pay $10 more or $100 more for something? And what's the difference? Right? And I think that, you know, if you're hanging your hat on technology alone, that's not the end game. It's not the end game. But it has to be holistic. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I agree. So South Coast Plaza down in California has just announced they're creating 14 pavilions. So they're taking the top floor of their parking structure and creating these pavilions that will be like shop experiences for consumers. And it's going to go back to by appointment, private sitting. You come in there, they curate the new product for you. They find out what you're interested in. It's a whole experience. You come in, I'm sure there's champagne and whatever else involved. But I mean, they're doing it in a way that it's safe for a consumer. They're, you know, giving a service to clients. And it kind of reminds me of, like, if you ever saw the series Selfridges back in the day, and that experience of retail and the, you know, retailers knowing their consumers and providing product for consumers. And I certainly know there's smaller shops that I go into that I know people and they know what I like and are able to kind of curate things or call me and tell me when things are coming in. And I think consumers, you know, that's another element that we may start to go back to, because there's this great service aspect to it and we feel special and we also feel safe. And I think with COVID, that's going to be the biggest thing, is the safety factor.
Yep. I think that somebody's embraced this idea that we can't have too many people in the store. Maybe an appointment. you can almost imagine the conversation, but we could imagine we could do all that upselling. If we had like the focus on the customer, one at a time, two or three in a store area, we put our team on it, and we really met their needs and a little bit more maybe, and delighted them. And out they went, next set in. So here's a situation where they've taken the adversity of social protocols and actually made something of it that could actually benefit the consumer, benefit their brand, or that kind of mal, landlord, call it what you like, and has actually taken the story forward. So these are sort of examples of people facing adversity and thinking of it as an opportunity to do something, as opposed to it's adversity, what do you expect us to do, you know? And it's this mental model, faced with this is what we do. We're glum. Well,
one of our mental models that became a blind spot, I feel, is this notion that, called the PowerPoint effect, I just made that up, but three bullets. You need everything to be three bullets, that's it. The message has to be a soundbite. It needs to be tweet-worthy. Too many people, and I'm probably guilty of it as well, you end up cutting corners, pretending something isn't complex that is, just to get to that outcome. To really do it right, you got to spend an enormous amount of energy dealing and sifting through the complexity to get down to a meaningful three bullets. And I think a lot of people just cut that right out and go, hey, we're going to make it simple. All customers do this, or we're going to do one thing, without understanding that there's a whole myriad effect to play. And especially when talking about shoppers, like everyone's saying, you know, even the notion of customers being afraid, Christine, a lot are, but not all are. And I think there is a youth effect there. I think that there could be a generational thing at play, but it's not like, but that's okay. If that's the reality, we should be able to have that discourse and say, it's not some monochrome or universal statement. There's a lot of variation. And I think we've shut ourselves out with our mental model that we've got to quickly get to those three bullets. We oversimplify too quickly, and we don't understand what we're dealing with.
I mean, Einstein said if he had an hour to save the planet, he would spend 55 minutes trying to define the problem and 5 minutes on the solution and the execution, I guess. And I think that most people have done it the other way around. 5 minutes, right, okay, and then 55 minutes talking about the execution because they actually don't do very much of it.
Yeah.
You know, when I, listening to all of this, what comes to mind is Tesla. So I remember last year or the year before, there were a couple of analysts on, I remember what network, might have been CNBC, who said, you know, Elon Musk and Tesla need to watch out because the big boys are coming. So meaning the large car manufacturers. Well, where are they now? I mean, they were supposed to have produced all these electric cars by now. 15 models were supposed to be out by now. And Tesla would have been, you know, buried. Tesla, remind me, I don't remember the exact number, but if I'm correct, I believe that Tesla's valuation is double, almost three of the car manufacturers, right? So it's fascinating to watch all of this, right? And say that the world, you know, that the old school is going to teach somebody the same lesson. That's what Borders thought they were going to do to Amazon selling books, right? Never happened, right? It wasn't supposed to work. So, you know, I think that if you're going to survive in retail, you need to give up whatever you thought in the past, whatever your ego had you carrying you to work every day with, and you start thinking about, I am in a moment where I need to learn how to compete again, because I will not be able to compete if I don't. And that is the problem for everyone. And a lot of the car manufacturers haven't figured it out yet.
So Gary, here's a business venture for you. I think it's a book and a course on Buddhism for business. Because we're sort of skirting around the idea of letting go. And
Lama did that, by the way.
Okay, so I think we've come to a natural conclusion. So...
Well, I don't know about conclusion.
Well, yeah.
Termination of our time together. maybe, yeah. But, and that's okay. I'm actually embracing the idea that there isn't a conclusion to this. I think that's what I like about the discourse that we all have, is that we're taking the time to really unpack some things, trying to get into some depth with it, and we're probably still only scratching the surface.
I agree with you, so, because I don't think anybody, I mean, one solution does not fit all.
No.
So if Craig can perhaps wrap us up.
Yeah. Thank you so much, everyone, for the excellent discussion today. It was very interesting. The future is going to be uncertain, and there'll be some pivoting, and it'll be interesting times. So this, again, is the Business of Retail podcast series, and we'll be back with more of this. So thank you so much for everyone who has tuned in and has stuck around this far into the conversation. Bye for now.
You have been listening to the Business of Retail podcast, an unflinching strategic alternative to the conventional industry discourse. Thank you for joining us. For more information, please go to www.thebusinessofretail.ca.